Welcome to the Bonneville Up to Speed Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oostie, and this is a podcast covering all things land speed racing on every level, from vintage small displacement motorcycles to cutting-edge streamliners and everything in between. And today, we're honored to have another very special guest from the voice of the online stream and track announcing at Bonneville and SCTA events, Mr. John Wennerberg.
Thank you, and thanks for asking me to be on here, Kevin. I'm still blushing at that nice introduction, so forgive me while I catch my breath.
Well, the fun thing is, some people might be saying, John Wennerberg, but most people know you as Seldom Seen Slim.
Indeed. We picked up that name years ago, and it's turned out to be a pretty good name for a race team, and it works for me, too.
Where did the name come from?
Honestly, Seldom Seen Slim was the nickname of a desert rat gold miner prospector hermit out in Ballarat, the town west of Death Valley. He was skinny old fart, and he would be out in the mountains for months at a time. He'd come back to town with his burro and his poke of gold, and he'd get liquored up and hoard up and get some supplies and head out into the mountains again. And because he was skinny, people called him Slim. People would, visitors would come to town and say, hey, where's Slim? And I guess the line is, they would say, he's seldom seen in these parts. If you go to Ballarat, you can see his gravestone. His funeral was covered on 60 Minutes and stuff like that. Nancy and I were motorcycling through there. She said, that'd be a good name for the race team. Ever since, it's been Seldom Seen Slim.
Great name. So, you are very involved in the whole land speed world. You've alluded to the race team a couple times. I alluded to the track announcer position, if you will. Why don't we start early? Tell me about your racing world.
Ooh, Nancy and I were on the way back from Alaska on the motorcycle, and that's when I started saying, you know, I'd like to go 200. And Nancy said, well, you better look up something about Bonneville. Well, that's where it all started. I bought a Honda Blackbird, and that would go 175. And then I got the ZX12 Kawasaki. I got the first year it was being built. In fact, mine was one of those that was like on the boat on the way here and turned around and went back to the factory in Japan to get the speed limiter installed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So anyway, I got it. And it was fun to ride, and I took it to 4 and 6 racing in Chicago. I'm not a mechanic. I guess I better put that mea culpa out there. I know how to twist a throttle and sign a check.
And hang on.
Yeah. So anyway, we went to 4 and 6, and they did some work on it, and I went out to Bonneville. We went there the first time ever in Speed Week, or August of 01. And spectated, just sat in an RV and watched the parade all day for 3 or 4 or 5 days. We went back a month later, in September of 01, and I got on the bike and made 5 passes, and 4 of them got me new licenses, and there, that was 200. That wasn't so hard. Well, that was then, and about 4 years later, and many dollars, you know, blew up an engine here, and I put in the new program for the nitrous. Except I forgot to push the enter button, so yeah, the nitrous didn't make the motor happy. I can show you the pistons. I still those. You know, I was having fun doing this, and I kept on putting more and more into the bike. Eventually, I put together a pair of runs that averaged 207 and some small change, and there it was, my record over 200. It was fun.
So was that the milestone you wanted to hit? Did you continue? Were you hooked? Were you going for 250 now? I mean, what happened?
Well, yeah, that was the milestone. In fact, I'll mention Keith Turk, a pretty well-known racer.
Yep.
When he was at Maxton, and I was at Maxton because we both raced there, he always jokingly said to me when I was saying, you know, I want to go fast, and he said, go out and get the hat first. Then go have fun getting other records.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of sort of what I did. You ready for a quick story about the time I got my club, my 200 mile per hour club?
That's why we're all here, man.
Okay. There I was in the pits, and I had made my qualifier run. And remember, at Bonneville, you make two runs, a qualifier and a record return run. And usually, well, for many years now, it's been you do the qualifier one day and the next day the return run. Well, anyway, I did my qualifier, but I hurt my tire. I spun it up and chunked some rubber. Put on the spare tire, and that's not a big deal. And now, however, it was a different size tire. I needed a different size sprocket. Not a problem. I got a different size sprocket. Put that on. Now I don't have a chain. The guy who was pitted next to me, also a fast motorcycle racer, faster than me. Anyway, he heard my plight. He knew that I needed to get a chain so I could go out and back up my record tomorrow morning. And he offered me one. He said, here, take this, you know, put it on, it'll work. I'll help you if you need it. Well, we got it on there, and I set everything up, and the next morning went out and ran the second run was a 2:10. And I got the record.
All right.
The story is the chain belonged to Larry Forstall, the guy who currently held the record. He lent me parts to break his record.
Oh, man, that is so cool.
And that defines Bonneville.
Yeah, you know, and that's not the only type of that story that I've heard. We're dealing with a group of people that are very generous with their parts and their supplies and their time. And I think because this isn't, you know, you don't make $1 million at the end of the race, it's a passion-driven sport. So people do it because they want to. And I think they want to see other people go fast, too.
Story about that at the shootout. The Mike Cook shootout at, late September, mm-hmm. 10 or 15 years ago, there were two of the vehicles that were running were the Speed Demon, the earlier incarnation of it, and the Mormon Missile, Lynn Goodfellow's diesel-powered streamliner that Curtis, whose last name I can't think of, from Wisconsin, was driving. Anyway, Curtis was to make his return run for about a 300 to 350 record. He left the line. The turbo spooled up so quick he lost it and spun. George Poteet and his entire team went out to push Curtis back into line so he could make a good run because they were working in that one-hour time window. Mm. So George's team dropped everything to help him. Yeah. This happens a lot.
Yeah, that's really cool. In fact, I recently spoke with Gail Banks, and he had a very similar story from the early 60s when he was running a Studebaker with a small block Chevy engine in it, and it burned valves. And another gentleman was there, loaned him some valves. Gail broke his record, same way you did with the borrowed chain. And that's just how it goes.
Oh, I know well.
So you did the race thing, did the spectator thing, and today you're one of the voices that share this event as it happens live. And I'm going to admit, as I hear you talk, I get kind of excited because my brain associates your voice with that event, which is great.
That's fun to hear. Well, let's go back for a second to some more of my land speed stuff, my volunteering.
Sure.
Keith Turk, once again, reported when he came back from Bonneville that, hey, you know, we did some volunteering out there and it was cool. And so the next year I learned that if I volunteered to help paint the stripes down the course, we would have first pick on pit areas, which meant I could get front row seating. Mm-hmm. I could see the course from my pit. Well, it started with the line painting, and now I'm also a motorcycle inspector. And I'm called the potentate of porta potties. There,
yes, got it out. One of your most prestigious titles.
Well, yeah, we're all volunteers out there. The only paid person is Joanne, who is the secretary of the organization. All the rest are volunteers. 10 or 12 years ago, J.D. Tone came up to me and said, "You want an interesting job?" And I took it over, and it's worked really well. It's kind of cool to know that you're in charge of 75 portable toilets. Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't have to clean them.
Yeah, clarify that. Yeah.
I'm the guy who knows where to put them and how many to put, you know, like out at the 6.5 mile for the safety workers out there and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's quite an operation, if you think about it. 75, you said?
75 is what, about what SETA rents. 75 toilets, and we get hand wash stands and ADA, that's handicapper toilets, and stuff like that.
I can't believe there's 75 portable toilets to rent in Wendover.
Oh, but there are not. We get them from Honey Buckets, a company up in suburban Salt Lake City.
Uh-huh.
I could send you a video of their semi-trailer full of toilets coming out of the salt.
And nobody's decided to set a record with the toilet hauler yet, huh?
Monty Warnock from SETA is out in the El Mirage area. He and Butch used to ride around in their pickup truck and did a lot of the setup. One time in the evening, a big rainstorm came up, lots of wind. And I forget, but they clocked one of the toilets with the door open. They clocked it going through the lights. Like 17 miles an hour or something.
There is an official time on a flying porta potty. Love to hear it.
Yeah. It's been kind of fun doing all of this stuff. And the toilets, well, I mean, when we race, we get a free toilet in our pit.
Yeah, and that's definitely a benefit, because for those who have not yet been out to the event at Bonneville, the pits are what, 5 miles long, 3 miles long?
No, but mile to mile and a quarter, because a lot of people want front row.
Right, yeah. I mean, the track, the course technically is five, but there is stuff happening end to end. So if you only have a couple of porta potties that are at the far end, you got a problem.
Yep. And they're about every quarter mile down the pits. For anybody who's asking, oh, it's too far, every place there's a pit entrance road, there will be some toilets there. Oh, and one thing, if you're a private party, you want one, you can rent them for your own pit, too.
Oh,
that's a lot of people that do that.
Yeah, nice thing. In fact, I have seen some next to a pit with a sign saying that this is a private party, if you will.
So, so to speak.
Yes. I'm also intrigued by the concept of painting the stripe. What was that like?
Well, first of all, it has changed from putting down hot oil that's black, as in if you were paving. It has gone to a biodegradable blue dye. A few years ago, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was decided that we had to be more environmentally friendly. And so instead of using the hot oil, they started using just blue dyed, I don't know if it's dyed water or what, but put that down with a little sprayer from a tank in the back of a pickup kind of a deal. And that line needs to be, from the start to the 5, 6, 7, at least out to the 8 miles. So that line has to be 8 miles long. Because they keep the lines on the course all the way down for the fast vehicles that, you know, lose a chute or whatever. So you got to have a line to let you know where to go.
Yeah, for sure. So, and you were saying before that today the line is down the middle and it used to be on the outsides. Looking at some of these in-car cameras of guys that are doing 200, 300, 400, that corridor gets real narrow real fast.
Yeah, it does. It does. And then there are the times when it's even narrower than that. I was riding on the ZX14 on Nancy's bike and looking at the tack, speedo doesn't work, looking at the tack and moving around on the bike, trying to get the best combination of aerodynamics and weight on the back wheel so it wouldn't spin. Well, I got so busy concentrating on the tack that I looked up, and about 100 feet in front of me was one of the quarter mile markers.
Oh, boy.
You look up and you say, oh, shit, and bang, I was through it. Well, I did not crash. Later on, we found that, yes, I was going 200 at the time.
Oh, man.
I came to a stop, and it shut off the engine. The dashboard took enough of a bump that some electronics shut down. Well, I was always going 200 miles an hour as I went through the mile marker. That was exciting. And I came to a stop, and the crew came to get me, and they were asking what happened, and I told them, and I said, but I'm okay. And crew chief Todd got on the radio, and Glenn, I think you better hold the course and send the ER people down here to Slim. I didn't break anything, but I got a little bit, like, underneath my leathers. I wear Kevlar long underwear. and threw the leathers through the Kevlar. I still got some raspberries on my arms from where I hit the posts on either side. They're just plastic, 3/4 inch PVC, but it was still, it was kind of interesting.
Oh man, 200 miles an hour into a PVC sign is definitely interesting. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And it put me into an interesting club. I know that Sam Wheeler, rest in peace, and Joe Amo, they've hit mile markers at 200 on motorcycles. So there's a few of us who've done it.
Wow.
John Manono, I think. But anyway, it does happen. Now, what happened was the middle of the course is commonly, and by the way, this is going back to the blue line, middle of the course is commonly less good quality because the cars go down the middle, mostly. That's a natural thing. So therefore, motorcycles and small vehicles, we often will go close to the line on one side or the other because the salt is better. Well, so I was over 10 or 15 feet from the line. As I went down the middle mile, if you look to the left, there is a crotch, a saddle in the mountains. That's where the crosswind hits everybody, including me. Blew me 10 or 15 feet sideways, bang, into the mile marker.
And of course, you know, like you're saying, you're trying to maximize your aerodynamics, which things at Bonneville and things at high speed tend to lift in the back. And that's when you get that braking of traction, and that's bad. Cars spin. What happens to bikes?
Well, so if I'm going along and I'm in, you know, like top gear or even fifth gear, and the throttle is pinned and I'm building up ahead of speed, at some point, the resistance, the horsepower that it takes to push through the air resistance, that quantity exceeds what you can put to the ground through the contact patch. So in the case of my ZX12, at about a buck 60, the wheel lights up, which is always exciting.
For sure, yeah.
And all of a sudden, wee, look at that. Just like one time I had the suspension set a little bit wrong, and at about 165, 170, it would get into a head shake. Hmm. And the way to fix that is pin the throttle.
Really? You wouldn't think so.
You pin the throttle because what happened is the rebound on the front shock was set wrong, and so the shock tubes, the fork tubes, were getting smaller, shorter and shorter and shorter on every bump I hit. Eventually, the geometry got changed to where it was unstable. If you crank on the throttle, you allow those forks to extend, it handled fine.
That's amazing. And these are things that you're only going to find out by being there and doing it.
Well, yes and no. I was fortunate when I met Scott Guthrie. Scott is a very successful, longtime Bonneville racer, and he has taught me so many things about driving at 200, how to steer, what to do when the front forks get too short, and things like that. So I want to make sure I give him credit. He has taught me a lot.
That's fantastic. And again, it kind of goes along with the nature of people that if you're at all interested in trying this, if you go to the event and hang out the first time and just kind of try to get your mind wrapped around it, because it's a different world over there. I like to say it's the slowest, fastest thing in the world, you know, because the pace of lining the vehicles up and letting them run is not like a drag race where it's, you know, call a class to the lanes and then one after the other they go. It's a much longer course. They're staggering the speeds. There might be a course cleanup or a safety thing. So there's a lot of waiting time. And if you're not used to that, it's something to experience. But if you want to know about stuff, there are plenty of people that are more than happy to share their experiences and their info with you, which is great.
Well, I like to describe it as if you're welcome to walk through the pits. If they're obviously busy or thrashing, leave them alone. But if they're just goofing around and they're doing easy work, walk by and look and, you know, ask questions. And don't be surprised if somebody hands you a rag or a wrench and says, here, come here, we need something.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of us racers know this, and we take advantage of it. Hey, we can get cheap labor from one of the spectators.
For sure. And again, it kind of builds that community. And, You're not going to see that at an F1 race or at an NHRA, you know, national event for top fuelers, where the pits are roped off and you can't get close and there's security guards. Out on the Salt and at El Mirage and these types of events, you're more than welcome to hang and, like you say, maybe give a hand.
Oh, yeah. And when Nancy was riding on the ZX14, the bike runs in production class. That means we can't make many modifications at all, except those that are completely out of sight. I couldn't put on stainless steel brake lines, for instance. It's a safety issue. Nope, they're not factory. So we couldn't lower the bike. Nancy was just barely, you know, tippy toes touching the ground. Okay, so we would hold her up at the start line and then give her a push off until it got rolling, until she was stable. I would often shout out to a spectator or two or three, "Hey, come here, would you help?" Oh, they loved it. They got to stand at the line and help a racer.
Yeah, and who would have anticipated that? You know, you go out there and you're literally hands-on. Uh-huh. So tell me about your wife Nancy's racing career, because that's fascinating too.
It goes like this. Nancy had never been on a motorcycle in her life until we met. She took the course and got her license and rode around a little bit, but was, you know, just, she rode around because it was fun to be with me. Well, out at Bonneville, she couldn't ride on the ZX12. That's the only bike we had at the time, because it was stock and the same thing, tippy toes. We put on a custom body, a Charlie Toy body from AirTech back in 04. Nancy was helping move it around the pits. And I said, "Nancy, your feet are touching the ground. You could ride this bike. We have it on video." She said, "Oh, shit, busted."
Oh, man.
By the end of that event, she had gone 185 on the bike.
Wow.
And got her B license. In fact, there's a DVD tells the story of three race teams. Aaron Sills and Andy with a little 60-60 laydown belly flopper of Jack Costella, and I think it was a stay-at-home or a stay-in-school roadster, and us. And you can see the video, maybe 20 minutes of Nancy making runs and doing this and doing that. So she had her moment in fame.
That's really cool. And she obviously liked it enough to do it. Is this something that she's going to continue to do, or is she still ride? Do you guys still ride on the street and all the rest of it?
Well, let's see. No, Nancy, I think it was in 11, she crashed at the start line.
Ooh.
Had unfamiliar gloves on. When she tried to let the clutch out, it came out too fast. It spun up the tire. She grabbed the clutch and chopped the throttle and high-sided at like 5 miles an hour right there at the line. And broke a couple of bones and ribs and things like that. And that was her last ride at Bonneville. In retrospect, I only did it because you wanted me to, hon. She's not really interested. And that class is competitive beyond my budget these days. So I licensed that bike. I ride it on the street. That's fun, riding a 200-mile-an-hour bike on the street.
Yes. Well, I won't ask any questions about that.
Well, no tickets whatever on my driver license. I haven't had a speeding ticket or anything in years.
Well, good for you.
Yes, I'm one of those who can really do it. I can save it for the racetrack. To go back to you asked our racing career, Nancy has done. I have had some interesting health challenges over the last year or two, and so therefore I haven't been able to ride in competition ride at all for this last year. Let's see, tendon problems in my right hand, and not one, but two open-heart surgeries.
Oh, man.
Oh, they're a piece of cake. They're not that bad. So a year and a half ago, I gave away my ZX12.
Huh.
Title, here, sign, it's yours, free and clear, no strings. Here are all the parts I've got. And the reason I did that is there were, two items in there, a good Motec controller and a $6,000 billet stroker crank that never got optimized, never got set up. So I looked for a year or two or three and finally found a racer who I felt was technically capable and motivated enough. And I gave him the bike. The only restriction, only string attached is when you get it running, I'm going to ride it too.
Nice.
Because that will put it up. it could run a 235 if everything comes together right.
Man, well, first, glad to hear that your surgeries were a piece of cake. It's not normally how you hear heart surgery described, but that's excellent. And what a cool thing to do, to find somebody who would appreciate it and actually be able to, you know, let that bike sing for all it's worth and get that to that person. So that's very kind of you.
It is a fun bike to ride. It's my first race bike, and it's just crude enough, I guess, you know, with the clip-ons way down there and a stepped header exhaust and upside down shifter and all those things just make it fun to ride.
For sure.
And I sure would hate for it to just sit in the garage here waiting for me to get old and not be able to ride it anymore. So I gave it away to Joe, and we'll see what he can do.
Right. It's like penning up a thoroughbred, man. You got to let these things run.
Yeah, yeah.
So a million years ago, I took a class at the Frank Hawley Drag Racing School in Pomona. And one of the lessons was, as you're on the starting line and in a drag race, you're looking at the Christmas tree to start the lights. And Hawley did a nice example where he said, if you stare down to the end of the track, your peripheral vision is not good enough to give you a good reaction time watching the lights.
Okay.
So he said, turn your head, look at the light. And then when the light is, you know, about to turn green, turn your head again and look as far past the end of the track as you possibly can. And that will help you stay straight. Is that a similar strategy on the salt?
Well, yep. You aim at floating mountain, basically. Hmm. Yeah, a floating mountain or floating island. Big lump of mountain sticking up out of the salt 10 or 15 miles away, but it's right down there at the end of the course commonly. And it does give you something to look at. And I know I look a mile or two ahead, at least that, and just, yes, you want to look ahead and get used to the narrowing focus as you're going faster and faster and that track is getting skinnier and skinnier.
Yeah. That's got to be a heck of a thrill, especially on two wheels.
Yeah, it is. I've made the run a lot of times. The last time I rode that ZX12 there, I did not have the nitrous or anything on it. I just wanted to go for a fun ride. And so I waited until Wednesday or Thursday of the event, and therefore not much in the way of waiting lines or anything. And I went down to the long course, and Jim Jensen, the starter, said, what are you going to do? And I explained, I'm just going to go for the fun of it, make an old lady ride. He said, go ahead. You do lots of work here. You've been busy all week. You volunteer. You got the hat. Go enjoy it. So I did. I left the line, and again, the bike is fun. It's nice and noisy, and I was enjoying it, and no issues at all. And I looked over there and saw the mountains in the saddle, and I looked ahead, and I saw a floating mountain, laughing my head off, just having a blast. I got the timing slip, 190 miles an hour.
You're only 10 off. just having a nice day.
Yeah, just out for a cruise. It's fun to be able to do that.
Yeah, for sure. So the most of your time during Speed Week, for example, is in the broadcast booth trailer, if you will.
Yeah.
That's a heck of an experience.
Yeah, it is. And this year, we may have a better experience. The trailer, I'll give you the quick rundown. The trailer is like a 20-foot, 25-foot cargo trailer with a plywood partition. The back end is where Sherry Howard and the time slip printer hang out. The other end is where I sit, where we've got a big window and an air conditioner. Well, air conditioner isn't really the best word. That tiny little sucker is mounted up there, and it blows the hot air into Sherry's place, so timing slips is 110 degrees. They leave the door open all day.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking towards the sun. Nice big 4x8 picture window, but towards the sun. And, well, last year, with the air turned on in the morning, turned on maximum, cranked as far as it'll go, in the afternoon, it was 93 degrees inside and outside.
Yeah, yeah.
But this year, we've got a new air conditioner, I'm told.
Oh, good. Yeah. Right on. And you're often joined by Ron, Mr.
Yes.
Christensen.
Ron has been announcing forever. He was announcing the first event I went to. And I've always been a radio announcer, a radio ham, and a radio announcer in college and that stuff. And so I enjoyed it. I wandered down there, and they were using just a little camper trailer. Well, over the space of an event, or a year or two or three, I figured out his system well enough. He showed me what he was doing, and I'd sit in for him, or the time that he was out for medical reasons for a year, I did all of them, or the smaller events like World Finals that he wouldn't do or didn't do, I would do. And so it's still Ron's bailiwick and Ron's paperwork, which is another thorn in the side. Boy, oh boy, our communications isn't great. We don't know what's going on half the time, but we cover our butts well, don't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway,
you never know.
His system, and we just kind of put it together, and we worked fairly well together and had a lot of fun. Now, let me stop and tell you about landracing.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's my website. That's the website. Bought it about 15 years ago from John Amo, who founded it back in the late 90s. And one of my dreams, my hopes, all the years that I had it, and I bought it in 08, was to do live streaming. Well, it hardly even existed in 08. And now for the last couple of years, it's been fairly easy. We live stream it down Land Racing, and lots of places pick up the audio. However, if you listen as an, I'll say, ignorant spectator, you don't know anything about land speed racing, that points out how dull it is. Because you hear zoom, there's nothing happening for about 3 minutes. Then you hear zoom, there's another 2.5 minute wait. So you got to want to like land speed racing. It can be boring in a way. Nonetheless, by putting it on the live stream, everybody can hear it. I'm told now that SCTA is putting some video on. So we're getting better and better, getting almost to be modern.
Hey, well, that's part of the cool thing about land speed racing and Bonneville in particular is it truly is where, you know, a lot of hot rodding started. So to go there today in 2022 and still have that experience that is kind of back in time is definitely part of it for me. I dig that. Now, would I like, you know, ESPN style world-class coverage? You know, I might if I'm not there, but I don't think I'd like what it would do to the event.
Yeah. Oh, that one, I will agree. There have been sponsors that have had their signs up or their flags up, but never had anybody big time come in and spend money like that. Like you might in a Formula One. It's just a small group. There's 600-800 land speed racers in the whole dang world. Okay, maybe more than that, but not a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Speed Week will have 500 entries. It's not as if you've got tens of thousands of people who watch it every weekend or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So interestingly, when you talk about kind of that lull in the action between runs, and you also said the small group, one of the things that I found the first time I was out there, I was out there as a kid, not to the event, but that's the first time I saw the Saw Flats. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, a buddy of mine finally said, hey, you need to come out here because I've always been fascinated. I've always loved it. I always read about it. But I just never really, I guess, took the opportunity to go. So standing there, the first thing that struck me was, again, the pacing or the lack thereof. and then it rained. So, you know, nothing happened for a couple of days. But you kind of can't help but feel like a little bit of an outsider when you first step on the salt because it's a different world. Literally, it looks like the moon and the people are all busy and seems like everybody knows each other but you. But soon you start to identify, and I was fortunate enough that I knew people just from, you know, being in this this industry. So guys like Chris Rashke and the Speed Demon team, I've known those guys for years. But lots of others, I had no idea who these people are. These people have no idea who I am. But when you start to see them run and you start to hear your broadcast, you start to build that connection. And then you go talk to them, and everyone's very, very welcoming and interested to talk about their program. You know, everybody's interested to share their own story. So that's always really cool. So then I fly home and I got to listen to the last day or two of your broadcast. And those pauses between the runs were like little suspense builders to see, do I know this guy? Or yeah, that's a friend of mine. Or, you know, so there was a connection there that got built. So I don't mind that little lull in the action. Now, the other people in my shop that work, they don't like it so much because we'll be in the middle of a conversation and all of a sudden I'll go, wait. And I'll turn my head and I'll listen. hear you, 247.190. Damn, you know.
Yeah. And I put a mic out in front of the trailer, the announce trailer, to pick up ambient noise. I want to hear the engines because I know a lot of people at home want to hear the engines.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, good story about that is the Got Salt car, mm-hmm. Frank Silva's car. He brought it out a couple of years ago in honor and memory of his dad. It's got an Arius methanol motor in it. Anyway, it's got a great sound.
Oh, yeah.
He made the pass in front of us, and you could hear it. And after he was gone down the road, and I said, man, that's what a race car ought to sound like.
For sure.
He used that little clip of audio on his YouTube video about it.
Oh, cool.
So you can hear me in there. And I just like the sounds. A nitro motor last year, Anita... can't think of her last name anyway. Anita Strasberg went 350 something in a nitro car. Oh, music.
Yeah.
Everybody at home, all the racers, want to hear that. I have teased many times that I get a payoff from the bosses around the country who tell me not to broadcast it because their employees don't do a dang thing for a week.
Well, that's true, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, there you have it.
I've been fortunate enough to be out there, though, over the past, like I said, 4 or 5 years, and it's a can't miss at this point, you know. And I don't know what the future is because I don't have a car, you know. I'm not a racer. My day job, we have a shop. We build high performance cars and restore muscle cars and all that stuff, but it's just not something that I've stepped into maybe yet. I just really enjoy the scene and the camaraderie, and I have helped hold a wrench and do a few things here and there. And it's something that, again, it's kind of a step back in time. At the same time, it's one of the most high-tech things there is.
When you say step back in time, so many racers out there got their starts hundreds of years ago reading Hot Rod magazine and looking at Mickey Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done this a number of times when somebody has never been out to Bonneville before, another racer, a crew person or something. You know, I'm driving them down the pavement. You get the Land's End where pavement ends and the salt begins. And just, you know, I have the guy get out, walk there onto the salt. And damn near every time they'll break into tears. Finally made it. I finally got here.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's so common. Yeah, there's been a lot of fun out there, done a lot of things.
It's like coming home to a place you've never been, but,
yeah,
you know, it calls to you. So, in your track announcing career of doing this stuff, you're in some different situations, again, trying to fill time and trying to hear who's up next and follow the numbers and all the rest of it. Anything fun, interesting, crazy, good stories of just a day in the life there that... sharing?
At the beginning of Speed Week, there have been as many as 4 courses running.
Mm.
Talk about juggling.
Yeah.
Because we do not have a display in the trailer there of who is on the line.
Hmm.
We overhear the starter telling the tower, and if we don't happen to catch it, it might be 10, 20, 30 seconds until we know who's up. The car may be on the roll. The bike may have left the line already. And so my campaign always includes asking the electronics communications people, hey, could we have the same kind of monitor that Debbie Dannenfelser does in the tower? She's the chief timer, and she's got way better instruments. And I'm saying that because there's sometimes we don't have a dang thing to say.
Right.
However, there is a form that USFRA prints, and I sent it out too, called the Radio Announcer Information Sheet. And that's not the registration. This is a completely separate, unofficial one, but you fill in stuff like who's your crew, who sponsors you, Anything you want us to say, give us this information.
Brilliant.
So we can talk during that 2 minute quiet spot.
Well, so that was going to be my next question is I've done a decent amount of, you know, announcing and events like that, where you're dead in the water after you've done your five tap dances that you've prepared. And you guys always seem to have something or some insight about the team or where they came from. And now you're tipping your hand a little bit to say where that comes from. But that's great. It's great that they share that stuff so that you can share it with everybody.
Yeah. It's also good for us that we have traveled enough. We're 1,800 miles from the Salt, where we live. And on that trip, we have visited a lot of racers from the Salt Cat team up in Columbus, Montana, and Chock Full of Nuts down in Houston. And we've visited lots of these people, and so we know them. And that allows me to tell more stories about them. And
yeah.
I guess my training, the one quote I'll offer is, a handful of years ago, Glenn Barrett was the timer and did the announcing. And I had made a run. Nancy was coming down to get me in the pickup, towing the trailer, and was going faster than 25 as she went past the pits. I don't know what speed she was, but on the radio, Glenn said, Slim's okay. You know, slow down, Nancy. You don't have to go that fast. He could see her going past the pits, even from a quarter mile away. I've tried to do that in many ways. If, you know, I know the driver. I know the crew chief. Rico from Vesco team, I'll talk to him and give him the speeds or something. Just and make it more friendly. I try and talk to the racers and talk to the crew and all of that to make it easier for everybody to understand. We are a group of people who know one another.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So as you, you know, you're going through your day and you're announcing the event, you put in some long days. When does your day start there at Speed Week?
Well, return runs start at 7 o'clock during Speed Week, theoretically, 7 in the morning. And I'll get there quarter to 7, 6:30 sometimes. When Ron is out there, he is the only person who gets to sleep on the Salt. He drives his car out there and sleeps in the back. So as long as he's there, I know he'll be up and have the radio turned on in case I have to come screaming in late or something.
Mm-hmm.
But 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening is when things wind down. And yeah, that could be a long day. However, we get deliveries from the SCTA people of drinks and ice, double, three times a day in a big cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the teams are courteous and friendly and bring over snacks. Mariani Farms, Dennis will bring in a bunch of salted almonds.
Great stuff, too.
Richard Thomason from Danny Boy Streamliner up in Washington State, he would bring in a case of apples.
Nice.
One of my favorite ones was 2 years ago, a team that was pitted kind of right across from me. I know them, they know me. And she brought me a grilled cheese and bologna sandwich every day for lunch, or the couple of times they had those.
Yeah.
And the bologna is like as thick as a slice of Spam. And she explained, George grew up eating these sandwiches. This is what we have. That was Betty Howard from the Speed Demon team,
yep.
George's sister. And the Speed Demon team looks after me. They bring me snacks and drinks and T-shirts and candy and all that stuff.
That's cool. Now, I know that being in the media, a lot of times you're front and center at an event, but you're in some ways not seeing it. You're not watching it. You're covering it. And it's a different mindset. Do you ever feel like when you get home, like, what the hell just happened?
Yes, exactly that. There have been a number of meets where we're all done at Friday at 10 o'clock winding down. And I went, I haven't even been to the line this year.
Yeah.
And going to the line is kind of fun because, you know, I'll wear the wristband so I can get down there and everybody knows me so I can get away with getting up closer than most people would. And of course, I'm wearing the red hat. That's always fun. It's just going down there and hanging out with people and shooting the breeze and talking. I know so many people now that it's a lot of fun for me, at least, to be able to go down to the line. And of course, you want to hear everything and smell all the fuels burning and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you're probably pretty smoked at the end of the day, I'm guessing. So I'm imagining it's a shower and hit the rack.
Well,
as soon as
yes,
possible.
It does, but you got to go eat someplace.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
The Salt Flats Cafe will almost certainly be completely jammed.
Mm-hmm. Rightly so.
And so what am I going to do for food, or do I have Ron babysit it for a while and at 5 o'clock I go out for something to eat? You deal with it, but usually you want to go back to the motel and shower.
Mm-hmm.
However, one reason to do that is because you have sweat so much during the day. For those who don't know yet, because it is so intensely hot and bright and there's no shade, you need to force fluids. When you visit a pit, one of the first things you'll be told or asked when you walk into that pit is, hey, you need a drink? because that's so important. And lots of times there will be cases and cases of water stationed at the line for the racers and crew before they make their runs. I have a lot of fun doing this, you can tell.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Cause you do have kind of an all access pass. But you work it. I mean, from being the potentate on up to, calling the play by play. I mean, you're on the whole time. So, it's definitely deserving. So the water is a great point. The hot and the sun is a great thing to note. What else would you tell somebody who is interested in coming out maybe for the first time?
Sunscreen, wear sunscreen and don't laugh. But if you're wearing short pants, put the sunscreen on your private parts because it does reflect up. And yes, you can get a sunburn on the bottom of your jaw, or the bottom of your nose, or wherever. It sounds silly, but it does happen.
It's
wear
true.
Sunscreen.
Yeah, I got the bottom of the nose and the bottom of the jaw when I was wearing long enough shorts, I think, to where I was covered there. But yeah, and it's funny because you'll see people wearing, the white cotton suits, head to toe, and the big brimmed hats and everything. And you spend one day out there and you go, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, there are so many. Kenny Lyons, a motorcycle racer, wears a welding helmet of a sort to keep the sun out of his eyes, and lots of big straw hats. And wear a hat. That's an important thing. If you don't have sunglasses, you can even buy sunglasses out there, the blue blocker kind. It's really intense. Take your eye drops with you.
So outside of listening to your coverage, how would somebody who's new to this be able to follow along? Is there any tips on how they can kind of get past that outside layer and one step inside?
With all due modesty aside, landracing.com,
mm-hmm.
the website. That is... We've got lots of information, but most interesting is a forum that has build diaries on there. And it's amazing to read how many secrets people are offering for free.
That's cool.
It happens all the time. Or, somebody on the forum, one of the regulars, will look and say, that isn't the way that brace ought to be. Or, check this weld. It doesn't look right in the photo that you posted.
Sure.
Everybody's trying to help everybody.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great sport and a great crowd.
Yeah, it's been fun. And what is it, 20 years? 20 years this year that this, anyway, we started in 01. And I've managed to work my way into being one of the regular volunteers. I never expected this. It sure is fun.
Yeah, that's too cool. Well, listen, my friend, I appreciate you taking the time and sharing the stories and the insight with us. One of the purposes of this little podcast project is to share this kind of stuff so people can feel more familiar, about the sport and about what it's like to spectate or participate, in addition to, maybe some technical stuff here and there, and just promote the whole thing. And your front row seat provides a perspective that most people outside of maybe Ron don't get. So thank you.
Yep. Oh, it's been interesting. I look forward to doing it for a while longer.
Right on. Well, we will definitely see you at Speed Week. I'll be out there again.
Oh, and whatever day you come visiting, I'm sorry, but I won't be there that day.
You too?
Yeah, yeah. I look forward to seeing you, Kevin.
All right, Mr. Slim. Thank you so much. The Bonneville Up to Speed podcast is produced with the AOK of the Southern California Timing Association and is available on all the major podcast platforms. Subscribe if you're into land speed racing, and be sure to visit scta-bni.org for all the latest news and the calendar of SCTA racing events at El Mirage and the Bonneville Salt Flats. And again,
Land Racing.
Landracing.com. There you go.
Yep.
Check that site out too. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in. And for Mr. John Winterberg, Seldom Seen Slim, I'm Kevin Oste. And now you are up to speed.